Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis.
And I'm Kyle Dotson.
And we are here at the 2018 SF Sketch Fest. How about that? We're very excited to be here today because we have a very special guest. I don't know if you've ever heard about this gentleman. His name's Rick Springfield. Let me tell you a little bit about Rick Springfield before we bring him up. He's got 20 albums. Wow. Is that the count, girls? You know. 20 albums. He's got 2 books. He played Live Aid, star on the Walk of Fame, Grammy Award, platinum albums, 49 acting credits on IMDb, 49 and counting. And he's here for us today. We are very excited because, Kyle, who have I always been talking about that was my dream guest?
Oh, Rick Springfield.
And who do we have here today?
Rick Springfield.
And who are you tired of hearing about? You're supposed to say Trump.
Oh.
Okay, let's hear a little music and then we're gonna bring Rick right out. Let's hear it, Kyle. What do we got?
iTunes, Sketchfest, Rick Springfield, table, 1 row, select.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. What the heck? We have never had a technical glitch like that. What happened?
I have no idea. I hit the wrong button.
Kyle, we've waited 5 years to get Rick Springfield, and then we have a computer talking to him? You gonna try it again?
Sure.
Are you nervous?
No.
Okay. Crank it up. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a big Cobbs Comedy Club and SF Sketchfest welcome to Mr. Rick Springfield!
That's for me?
That's for you.
Ship the travel.
I can add Rick Springfield Roadie to my resume now. Rick, that song was The Man That Never Was. That was you and the Foo Fighters.
Yeah, that was done for the Sound City documentary a couple of years ago, I think it was now.
Those guys love you, the Foo Fighters. They're bona fide Rick Springfield fans.
Well, they are now. They're great guys. We actually went out and played a couple of shows, and they're an amazing band. They're just really loud. It's awesome. I love those
You
guys.
And Dave wrote that song?
Yeah, actually, we all got together, all the Foo Fighters and I got together in their studio and came up with the track, and then I wrote the vocal and the words. Sorry, I shouldn't move away from the mic, right? I do this.
You can keep looking straight. You don't have to look at me.
Okay.
I'll just be like that guy over
your shoulder.
Pretend
you're the bartender.
Yeah, I'll be like that.
Can I get a beer?
That guy over your shoulder. No, anything you want. You don't want a beer, though, do you? You're kidding, right?
No, I'm good.
No kidding.
I'm flying.
If you want another green tea, we'll get it for you. No problem.
I'm good. I'll have to pee if I have another green tea.
And Butch Vig, he produced that, right?
Yeah. Butch did. He also plays with...
Garbage. Garbage?
No, what's garbage? Yes, garbage. You called it.
I did call it. You know what? I'm too far away from you. I'm getting closer.
Come on, move in, baby. Let's get close.
Wait. I can't be too far, right?
How do you reserve these seats?
Rick Springfield?
Oh, all right.
You know these. You know some of these women, don't you?
I do. I have seen them probably more than I've seen my own wife. As a matter of fact.
Before we get into your new album, which is coming out next Friday, it's called The Snake King. It's a blues-tinged album, is what I say.
Yeah,
I've infused. Heard the whole thing. Blues-infused.
Yeah, it's kind of like the herbal tea.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to tell a quick story because you have so many fans here tonight. This was a couple years ago. It was in Santa Monica. You were doing one of your solo acoustic shows, mm-hmm. when you were you it's just you and stories, and it's fantastic, and Kyle was with me, and after the show we go around to the back of the venue because I'm a fan and I want to get your autograph as a fan. So we get back there and it's me and Kyle, and there's a woman that's waiting there too, and it's awkward if you don't strike up conversation with someone, so we start talking to her. She could be here, let's find out. And we introduce each other. She said her name is Mary. Is there a Mary here tonight? No? Okay. So we start to talk, and she says, she goes, are you a big Rick Springfield fan? And I said, yes. And she said, how many times have you seen Rick? And the number that I named was way too low for Mary. She did not like it. It was literally like, five
or six. She said, you're not a real fan.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I've seen him like five or six times. And she's like, oh, boy. And I was like, well, how many times have you seen him? And literally, it was like 400 times.
Wow.
So I said,
well, God bless you, Mary. I don't like anybody that much.
So then the conversation continues. I'm like, well, then have you met him before? And she goes, oh, yes. I'm waiting here for my hug. Now, I'm a comedian and I'm a cynical. So I immediately think, oh, Mary's bonkers. She's slipped a chip. But then, like, one of the tech guys comes out, and he goes, hi, Mary. And she says hi, names him by his name, and he comes over, and he gives her a hug. And I'm like, oh, she's getting a hug from Rick Springfield, and as soon as he comes out here. And sure enough, you come out, you make a beeline for this woman, call her by her name, and give her a hug. And I was like, holy cow, Mary's connected. And then you signed my album, and that was my story. So, very nice.
Don't tell my wife about Mary, okay?
All right, so what I love about Rick Springfield is a lot of people think Rick Springfield is this handful of songs. And we know, look at the lady shaking her head, she's like, no fucking way, is it just that? You have recorded so many albums. In the past 5 or 6 years, you've released 3 albums easily. Mm-hmm. And you have a brand new album coming out. I love that you're still making music. You seem like you have a passion for it. It's not just, you could easily go out, Rick, and play, what Journey does. They play the Dirty Dozen, they play the hits, and they call it a night. But that's not what you're about, because I believe you are a true musician.
Every musician believes in their craft, I mean, obviously. But I know a lot of friends of mine have just stopped recording because mm-hmm. they don't really see the point.
Yeah.
But for me, I have to record because I write, and I don't want it just to sit on a shelf. I need people to hear it and say yay or nay, and I love you, Rick. I need to hear that more. It's my depression that makes me so damn needy. So.
But Billy Joel stopped recording albums like in the 90s. Now, do you believe that no songs are in his head and there's pop songs that...
I really stopped recording because Elton still records.
Yeah, Elton still records. Billy Joel just stopped.
Elton,
yeah.
And he's still recording, and I think, I don't know, maybe... I think different people have different views on it. Once you've had like big record success, mm-hmm. and then you put a record out, like the Stones put out a great blues record, and it was like... Well, no one really, heard it.
Yeah.
So it's the Rolling Stones. Paul McCartney puts out records, But the point is not the point that it sells and that you make, a gazillion dollars. The point is you're making music and you put it out because you want to share that with people. That's
right.
The whole point of it. You need to share it. And that's what everybody...
Woo.
Okay, sorry. That Pete Townsend moment.
What's great is this is not a video podcast.
Oh, sorry.
So no
for
one
those
will see
visually
that.
Impaired, I whacked the microphone in my hand and knocked it away. Okay, so... and also have ADD. So what was I saying?
You were talking about how you write the songs and you need to get them out there because you want to share them with people.
You want to share it with people. I mean, that's why every musician got into into the music, the business because of that. They wanted, they wrote music and they wanted people to hear it. You know, a little bit of it was, I want the girls to dig me, you know, that's it, that's it. Or the guys to dig me, that's in every musician. We're a needy bunch of motherfuckers. But the main drive is to share what you say with people.
Love it. Well, let's share a little bit of music from the Snake King. This is the opening track. Kyle, what do we got? What's the first one you're going to cue up with no computer music?
This is the Land of the Blind.
Land of the Blind. Let's hear a little bit of this from Rick Springfield.
I'll dance.
Come on.
Now you probably want me to explain that, right?
How many people here? Is that the first time you've heard this song?
I love it.
No, you diehard crazy people. Unbelievable.
Oh, I did it live on.
You pre-ordered it, and you've done it live already. Hmm. Now, that for me, that's the least blues-tinged song,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it is.
That's a very pop-accessible song.
Right, I didn't limit myself to just the strict blues thing because I wanted it to go whichever way it went.
Right.
And some are more blues than others. That one's kind of more kind of Dylan-y than blues, certainly. Mm-hmm. But Dylan was very blues-oriented.
Right.
I mean, he wrote a lot of blues songs. He just sang them in his wild voice. And wrote about, you know, amazing shit. But that's, you know, it's just a kind of a, that song is just saying, you know, we need to wake up.
Right. And when I got this album and I heard, you know, oh, it's a blues infused or blues tinged, I was like, boy, I hope it's not how, that kind of blues. And it's not. It's not, it's not, it's not at all.
That's what he meant. But there's ZZ Top, which I love.
Now, it seems a lot of religious references on here. God and the devil and a lot of stuff like that. There's growling between the tracks.
That's the devil.
That's the devil? Who's doing the devil? Is that you doing the growling?
No, that's a real devil. We actually invited him into the studio. Okay. And he actually growled for us.
He's very hard to get.
And God provided the link music, so it was, and this is a lot about sex too. It's my three favorite things: God, the devil, and sex.
Okay.
And they're very, very interchangeable.
All right, what's the next track we have queued up from the Snake King?
This is The Devil That You Know.
There you go. This is a great one.
I'm the devil that you know, baby. I know what you want.
Cool.
I see some people sitting out there going, wow, that's really cool. And others going, the fuck is that?
Were you raised Catholic?
Church of England, which is like Catholic, only with a little less guilt. A little bit.
Okay.
A little bit less guilt.
Because I was raised Catholic. I'm a Reformed Catholic.
Yeah.
So not practicing anymore.
It's brutal being raised Christian. For me, it was very tough because, I mean, I have crosses. I don't want to get the wrong impression. I'm certainly not anti-Christian, but because I have crosses all over my house, and I have a cross tattooed on my arm, and it's very deep in my system. But I was raised believing that God kicked your ass when you did stuff wrong.
Right.
And when you did stuff, things happened that were good, you got down on your knees and you thanked him. And I didn't understand this punishing father that, at his whim, kicked my ass as a little kid, and that stayed with me. And but
are you talking about your father or a priest?
No. I'm talking about God as your father.
Gotcha. Okay. God, I just wanted to clarify.
I believed in the whole white beard. He's up there looking down on us, dealing out shit and giving.
Sure, faith. That's faith.
But then I'd see the bully, at school who was picking on me, get through school scot free, and I'd get busted for my long hair or staying away. And I'm going, where's the fairness in this? But the modern version of that now is I'm looking around going, I see evil everywhere in this planet. Mm-hmm. And the thing that, the big turning point for me was when ISIS, and this may sound trite, but it's true for me, ISIS buried those women and children alive, the Christian Arab kids and women alive. I just, that was like the worst thing I've ever heard in my life.
Terrible.
And I said, where is God when evil is so fucking prevalent in this world? And so that's the question that the album forms, basically. And I'm prepared to lose fans over this because I go down south and I go to a gig and people hand me like a bag full of Bibles and Bible pamphlets, So but I'm not ragging on anyone's belief system, because my mom very much believed in her God, and she passed away last year, and I envied her commitment and her surety of where she was going.
Well, I can remember I was raised Catholic, and I can remember when they introduced going to confession face to face in front of the priest, and we had to do it. I was in Catholic school, and
I wanked off. Okay, already, you did it last. Enough.
Hail Marys.
You just got it right. What's he saying? Wank. What is that word?
But I confessed.
Beating the beanpole.
I confessed face to face to this priest that I had looked at a Playboy magazine, and he made me feel so terrible.
Meanwhile, he's looking at your ass going, that's a nice
exactly.
ass.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Because I had a sweet ass when I was in eighth grade.
I bet you did. How old were you?
I was in like seventh or eighth grade, and I went home to my mom, and I said,
I bet you were hot, baby.
I went home, and I told my mom, I go, I'm never doing that again. And I never did. And anytime I had to go to confession, I just made stuff up. I'm like, I was mean to my sister. I was mean to my parents, and I got out of there.
I killed and ate my sister. Okay. 10-8 Hail Mary. Yeah, I mean, the whole fact that a human being has rule over you like that is just so bizarre to me.
It's awful.
So bizarre.
It's awful. Kyle, we got one more song for now from the Snake King. Then we're gonna go way back to the beginnings. What do we got, Kyle?
This was Jesus Was an Atheist.
All right, here we go. Perfect timing. That's cool, buddy. Awesome. Tongue in cheek.
Yes, tongue in cheek. And
Let's hope people get the joke.
Well, it's kind of a joke. I mean, part of it is the whole humanization of Jesus, the whole, Jesus was, and it's just my perspective, and I'm going to piss people off, but fuck it. Jesus was either truly God, or he was out of his friggin' mind saying he was God. There is no halfway point. There is he was human, but he was God's messenger. No, Jesus specifically said, I am God. I am, right?
Yeah. Huh? Oh, uh-oh.
Yeah.
All right.
No, it's true. It's absolutely true.
Maybe we'll walk the crowd right now.
And I'm going to get emails saying, Jesus did not say that, but he did. He said, I am God. And it's hard for me, you're supposed to be able to relate to this human being that suffered, but if he's God, well, he knows everything and it's going to be okay, and but the whole point of the sacrifice of Jesus was that's what we all look at. We know we're going to die, and we don't know really what's going to happen,
That's
and
true.
And the fact that Jesus wasn't sure and tried to get out of it and doubted it at his last moments. I mean, so obviously I believe in a Jesus. I Christian teachings pass very strongly, exist very strongly in me, but I have questions. And that's why I went to the East. I looked to Buddhism, I looked to Taoism, I looked and read everything I could. Actually, the Buddhist book is not really a Bible, it's just a collection of Buddhist sayings. Hang on, where's the cop button?
That's your water is right there if you want some water.
Work. It's broken. Fuck! So the first book, I stole that book from a Japanese hotel.
Well, there you go. That's very
kind of
religious
weird,
stealing.
You know, but it put me on a path of seeking God within rather than Christian religion. My upbringing put God as an outside source, and you prayed to him, whereas Eastern religions put God within you. And that spoke very strongly to me.
Yeah. Wow, we got heavy here with Rick today.
Let's tell a joke.
Well, I tell you what. Let's break the heaviness by Kyle. If you could play the theme from Mission Magic.
Oh, jeez. I'm leaving.
No. No, you're not.
Okay, can we stop that? All right, that was a song written to order for a cartoon show, which called Mission Magic, which I actually met Quentin Tarantino at a party, and he said, dude, I used to love Mission Magic. I said, that's what fucked you up.
Maybe he'll bring it to the big screen, and you and Miss Tickle can kill children.
Oh, geez, Miss Tickle.
I bypassed Speak to the Sky because I thought we were gonna keep talking about religion if I played Speak to the Sky.
We would.
So now I want to read the description here of Mission Magic, and I have it here because I have to read it. Miss Tickle is a high school teacher who has some magical powers. Where is it? Augmented by accessories in her bag. That sounds like drugs to me.
Yeah.
It sounds like she's passing out edibles. Yeah, she's passing out edibles to the kids. And then I love it. Like, then it's just like at some point during the episode, Rick Springfield will come out and sing a song.
Out of a mirror or something. Didn't they come out of a mirror or they went into a mirror? And when we actually had conversations about this show, right, I sat down with some of the animators from Fantasia, the Disney Fantasia, right? And we're talking about Yellow Submarine and really innovative stuff.
Right.
I'm getting really excited.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
Yeah, this is really, like, would be a really different thing. By the time it got through the corporate machinery, it was just another stupid, dumb fuck Saturday morning Xerox cartoon show with the same voices.
Rick Springfield and a talking cat. And
totally, yeah, it was pretty lame. Pretty lame.
Well, you look fantastic on the cover.
I do.
Now, look, this is the thing, too. I've heard you say before that, like, you were a kid, you was hard to talk to, meet girls and all that kind of stuff. And I look at the picture of you on your first album cover, and I'm like, that dude didn't have any problem meeting the girls. You're not one of these models that goes, I was fat and no one took me to the prom. It's like, you're lying, Heidi Klum.
No, I was a very shy kid, and I was very... unsure of myself, and I think it was the start of my lifelong battle with depression, was that I didn't think I was worthwhile and nobody would ever like me. So I didn't... Oh, I appreciate the awe. No, I worked out. I got laid a lot. That's why I picked up the guitar. It was so the girls would come to me.
Yes.
Right? Oh, I love guitar playing. No, I could never go up to a girl and make her feel comfortable by talking to her. Mm-hmm. You know, it would always be... How are you? My name's Rick. You know, like, oh my God, this guy's a fucking psycho. So I could never make a girl feel comfortable, and so I could never feel comfortable with a girl. So, but I did, you know, I mean, the music thing, playing in a band,
right?
It works.
But you also have to be good at playing music. You just can't be plonk, 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 hey,
yeah,
and then get girls.
Yep.
Right?
I don't care if you talk stupid. I want to sleep with you.
Let's jump to, we're going to jump to play Take a Hand for Me. Because I think, before you play it, I think this is the first song that starts to let us know what Rick Springfield music is going to sound like as we get to the 80s. Also, you have... Nigel Olsen from the Elton John band.
Right, Nigel and Dee, actually.
And Dee Murray.
They just left Elton's band. It was Nigel, Dee, and Elton. That was a three-piece band that he toured
now
with.
And then it was Nigel, Dee, and Rick.
Well, and then they came. I befriended Nigel. I got a whole. There's a whole story about. We used to go to acting class. Okay. First acting class I attended. Richard Chamberlain would also come in every now and then. Where's the cough button? Come in every now and then.
That's your water right there. If you want water, that's yours.
Oh, hang on, it'll make me pee though. We'd come in every now and then to work out. You know, just to work out to get the gears moving. And Richard would always have parties at his house. And Elton would come because they were, you know, friends.
Yeah.
And Elton would come, and so Nigel and Dee would come, and the whole band, his band would come, and I'd play piano, and I'd play a couple of songs, and Elton would get up and play a couple of songs. So I basically opened for Elton in the 70s, right, early 70s. But I became good friends with Nigel, and when they left Elton that first time, I called them up and said, would you guys want to play on my new record? And they were amazing. They were so great and totally killed it.
You must have been out of your mind when you were in the studio with these guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were amazing. And to have that quality and that talent, that amount of talent playing on my little rock songs was just, it blew me away, for sure.
Well, let's hear Take a Hand. You got to put that back in the set list.
Yeah, the band was me, Nigel, and Dee. Because I played the guitar and all the keyboards on that. So it was just the three of us, actually. Now, I haven't heard that album in a long time. But yeah, so it was a very kind of family thing. They were really into it. And actually, Nigel recorded one of the songs off there later on in his solo career. And we still, Matt, my friend Matt, who wrote the last three albums, not this one, not Snake King, but the last three albums with me.
Matt Bissonette
is now the bass player in Elton's band.
Yeah.
So, you know, we say hi to each other all the time through, you know, Nigel now. We're all getting older and, you know, I love you, man.
So now, after Wait for Night, which was 1976, get like 5 years between albums, and in that time you become soap opera star.
It happened around the same time, actually. What happened through those years was I was a contract player for Universal.
Oh, okay.
And I was I worked on Rockford Files, Battlestar Galactica, Incredible Hulk, Eddie Capra Mysteries, if anyone remembers that one, $6 Million Man.
I worked on all
the Universal shows, yeah. So it was really great for me. And then General Hospital came after I'd actually recorded this album.
But shut up. but it's 5 years between albums because you're doing all the acting.
Absolutely. Yeah, I did record an album after that that had the Bruce song on it. She called me Bruce, that they later released after I'd had a hit, so it became a hit, which is great. But
it's like a novelty song, kind of.
Yeah, but the album was never released. We tried to get a deal with this album that song was on, and nobody wanted it. So I was kind of going, wow. Maybe it's not going to work out.
By the way, you bring up the song Bruce, and I have to tell you, my mom is 82 years old, and guess who she thinks I was going to be interviewing today?
Yep.
It's not even a joke.
No, I know.
It's not even a joke. Yeah.
I get it. I was in one of my doctors. I say I have like a league of freaking doctors to help prop me up. But I was in there, and she gave me a card for the next appointment. I looked at it and said, Mr. Springsteen.
Yeah.
And I've been going to her for like, you know, 20 years. I showed it to her and she, oh my God, I'm so sorry. She tried to take it back. I said, no, I want to keep this.
Well, I tried to explain to my mom, like, no, it's not Bruce Springsteen. It's Rick Springfield. And she goes, wait, there's another Springsteen? I go, no, I just, what's wrong with you?
I know people still say to me, I loved you on General Hospital, Bruce. But they get it right. They just get the name mixed up. And when I was working with Meryl, I did a movie called Ricky and the Flash.
Ricky and the Flash.
And she said, even she gets it. She said, people will come up to her and say, I loved you in Fatal Attraction. And she goes, that was Glenn Close.
By the way, Ricky and the Flash, Rock and Peace, Jonathan Demme, that was his last film.
Oh, what, got to work what a with, beautiful man he was.
And there's a scene in Ricky and the Flash. It's the best scene for me in the movie. It's the scene with you and Meryl Streep in the kitchen of the bar, and you are terrific in that scene.
Oh,
so
okay.
I'm not joking.
Well, Jonathan Demme, the director, who also did Silence of the Lambs, mm-hmm. which if that's the only movie you ever made,
right.
that would be pretty friggin' awesome. But he also did, you know, so many other great films, Married to the Mob and Stop Making Sense. And he was a champion for me and really guided me through that scene and was amazing. And we did it about five times. He kept saying, you know, keep the anger, don't, because I'd kind of go in and out of with through the thing. He said,
yeah.
keep the anger, because you really, you know, and I did through one scene, one time, and he goes, cut! And you knew instantly that
and that was the one.
That was the one.
And who's the band in the movie? It's you, it's Meryl Streep, it's who's
Bernie Worrell's a keyboard player who sadly has passed away.
Yes, Rock and Peace. Well, he played with the Pretenders.
And Rick Rosas, who was Neil Young's bass player, who sadly passed
also,
away 4 days after we finished shooting.
So sad.
And
is it Vitale on drums?
Yeah, Joe Vitale on drums,
who's, drums.
Thank God, still alive and is an amazing human being, and I see him all the time. He plays with Joe Walsh, and he actually Rocky Mountain High. See, that's a Bruce Springsteen Springfield moment.
Yeah, true.
All right? Happens to everybody, okay? Get over it. So he went to Springsteen, apparently someone told me this. He said, I got to tell you this story. As a producer, I went in to see, and he said, I'm at this department store, and Springsteen comes in and buys a bunch of clothes and goes up to the cashier and hands him his credit card, and the cashier picks up the phone and goes, yes, I have a Mr. Springfield here, and he's looking to buy. I went, yes, one for the team.
Thank God. We're going to move on to Working Class Dog. Now, this is the big breakthrough album. This is the first big one.
Mm-hmm.
Let's listen to the first track in the album. Let's listen to Love Is All Right. Yeah.
That's 80 snare.
Yeah. And that was recorded at Sound City.
Yeah.
That is like the perfect opening track. Such a great way to start that album.
And that's me and Mike Baird, basically, on that. Mike Baird, Jack White on that one, my drummer who I've known since 1976. Jack and me, we stood in there and I played guitar and then overdubbed the guitars and overdubbed the bass and then I sang the backgrounds with Tom Kelly, who later wrote Like a Virgin. And,
mm-hmm. He's been on the show. Tom's been on the show.
Oh, he has?
Yeah.
He's a lovely
great
guy. An amazing talent. And him and Richard Page for Mr. Mister before Kyrie Eleison.
Yeah.
And
doom, doom, da, doom, they were doom. Doing background vocals
for
you.
Were my background singers. Yeah. So it was pretty great. And I remember taking that home. I recorded the guitars once. I took them home and they were too splashy sounding. Mm-hmm. And I wanted them much, much tighter sounding. So we went back and put the guitar amp in this two doors going to Studio A. One you close, you open one and walk through and then close it and then open the other one so the sound doesn't go leak into the thing. So I put it in there, the amp in there, to make it like a really tight sound. And I hear that every time I hear that record.
And now there's a reason you recorded at Sound City. Your manager at the time.
My manager, Joe Gottfried, who was a god and my champion, and who the last year before Jesse's Go broke he gave me, put me on the payroll at like $100, $150 a month, so that I could just write and not have to worry about where, you know, paying for the light bill and that. So it was pretty amazing, because he didn't have a lot of money back then. I mean, the studios would make him money, but he was not the greatest businessman, you know. And but he is responsible for me writing Working Class Dog as I am, because he gave me the freedom to say, okay, I'm just going to sit here and write these songs. And he was an amazing human being.
Well, again, that was your fifth album, and that's the first time where everything, you were firing on all cylinders on that album. Everything was working. The songwriting's amazing.
I knew it was something special. I didn't think it would be successful, because I'd had three failed albums before.
Right.
I knew I'd hit something. And Tom Kelly, actually, when we were doing the backgrounds, he goes, this is a happening album. Which, you know, session singers didn't say that shit.
Right.
You know, they sing on everything, and but he goes, this is a really happening album. So it was great.
And this was produced, the first time I ever saw this name was on Working Class Dog, and I don't know if I'm saying it correctly, Bill Drescher. Mm-hmm. Who is Bill Drescher? Tell me about him.
Bill was one of the engineers at Sound City, and Bill and I produced all my records, except for the second album, which Keith Olsen produced, and Jesse's Girl and Up and everything, because Keith was like the top 80s producer at the time, and Joe, he worked out of Sound City, and Joe said, would you record two songs with Rick Springfield? He's got a new album, and he goes, really? He'd actually cut the clicks out of my first album in 1971, where they'd done drop-ins for my vocal. He'd sat, Keith Olsen, as a young kid, had sat and cut the tape.
Yeah, it wasn't digital then, it was tape.
No, it was
tape. And
when they'd punch in to do a line, because I didn't sing it right the first time, you'd punch in and they'd be like, there's noise on the tape. So he went through the tape, the 24 track, and cut out all the clicks the punch-in. And then he became the big producer, and I played in my demos, and he liked Jesse's Girl. He said he liked that song best. So we recorded that one, and then and he taught me a lot about editing and about just production. So and then I produced the rest of the stuff with Bill. We did Living in Oz, which to me was kind of my writing sound breakthrough record, to me personally.
Yeah, and heavier than Success.
Or where I wanted to be.
Working Class Dog. Okay, Kyle, play the next song. One of the most iconic opening guitar parts. We all know it. Everyone knows it. Everyone loves it. Let's hear it. Let's hear it. I don't know. I don't really like it. Now, Rick, you are going to be so happy because I'm not fucking asking you about Jesse's Girl. If you don't know about Jesse's Girl, Google it. Whenever I see you on any interview and people start asking you the story of Jesse's Girl,
is
I want to punch
story?
Someone. Oh,
I
give you permission to punch them in the face the next time they ask you about, because I just, we get it. We know.
Yeah, I know.
It's amazing. He's done. But there's so much more to talk about, and that's what we're about today. But I do want to ask this about the recording of the song. I always read that Neil Giraldo played the solo.
Yeah.
But I recently read an article with him where he said he plays all the guitars
and the bass.
So that's true.
Yeah. He's an amazing, amazing guy. And he was the perfect guy for it. I mean, Keith didn't know that I could play guitar. So Keith always felt very happy with his little group of players that he knew would do the job, right? And he just finished Crimes of Passion with Pat Benatar. And he said, Neil's going to play guitar on this. And I went, well,
I play guitar.
Listen to the demo. That's me playing everything on the demo, right? And the demo is basically the song that you hear.
Right.
It's the riff. It's the drums. I played drums on cushions because I couldn't play drums. And at a crappy, you know, dime store bass that I had. But I did demo the song out, and that's the song that you hear. The only thing Keith changed was he cut out the solo. I had originally had like a big, long solo on the A, like a free kind of thing. So he cut that out, and it made it a better our song. And what Neil added was his sound. He had two amps, and he had what was called talk amongst yourselves. Anyway, it lowered the pitch, right, of something.
A knob, that's the word I'm looking for. That's what it is, a knob.
A knob, and it lowered the pitch, so he had his amp split, and this thing I forget what it's called, I got one at home. Anyway, and it lowered the pitch, so it sounded like two guitars. It was a really incredible sound. I actually copped it for the rest of the album. I went out and bought the same shit. But Neil played the perfect solo.
Well, he's an amazing guitarist.
He's an amazing guitar player. And he was very pissed when the video came out, too. I heard this later on. Because I lip-synced the solo in the video, right? Because I didn't think Neil Giraldo would want to get in my crappy little video. He's playing with fucking Pat Benatar, for Christ's sake. Why would he want to play with... So I didn't even think to ask.
Yeah.
And he was so mad that I didn't have him lip-sync his solo in the record. But we've since made friends, and he's very proud. He said, that's the only number one song I ever played on. I'm really proud of it. And
well, that was also in the article I just read. He says that. It's my only number one.
Yeah, yeah. And they talk about it in their show. He talks about it and plays a bit of it, you know. And he's very proud of his contribution to that song, because it has become kind of an iconic 80s kind of track,
right.
You know.
He also, if you know the Kenny Loggins song with Steve Perry, Don't Fight It, Neil also plays the solo in that song. So.
Yeah, he's a brilliant player. And the solo he played in Jesse's Girl is so... could have very easily gone country, because that's the kind of chord progression it is. You instantly want to go country with the solo. And he played a great pop solo that really lifted the song. And I focused on making every solo from that point on really part of the song, not just a break between singing.
And it's whenever I've seen you in concert, not as many times as Mary has, but as soon as you play the opening, it's just the crowd.
Great Paul McCartney line, yeah, where he says, I know when I play Beatles songs, suddenly it's like, you know, neutron stars opening up in front of you. But when I play a new song, it's like a black hole.
Oh, well, that's not true.
No, but it's true. I mean, I play a new song, I don't see any freaking cell phones light up. But once I play Jesse's Girl, you know, suddenly, oh my God, there's people back there. I had no idea there was an audience back there.
All right, so with Working Class Dog, also, first of all, your dog's on the album cover, which is cool, Ronnie,
my boy, yeah, and Gomer I put on there. I've always had a dog on the album. This is the first one that I think there hasn't been a dog on for a while. There is a snake on it, but we didn't want to put too many like real snakes on it because it creeps people out. And it's not really about a snake. It's about a spirit, an energy.
Did you ever think maybe to call it the Dog King?
Yeah, that's my next album.
Right,
if this
cool
one goes, we're going to have a series, a dog album, a cat album. We'll sell to everybody. It'll be great. A parrot album.
Along with making such an amazing album, there's accolades. You get platinum. Get a platinum album from this. It's gone multi-platinum since then, I'm sure.
Working Class Dog, yeah.
Yeah. Would you have those hanging at your house?
No, I've never been that guy, honestly.
What do you do with them then? They're just in the garage?
I stuck them in a shed, and it got rained on, and I threw them out.
Honestly. Oh.
I put one up, and it was the gold record for when Working Class Dog finally went gold, and I put it up because it was a photo of my dog.
Okay.
On the cover, and I loved that. And it was kind of, you know, that's kind of cool. It's first time it's ever happened, but I never put any of the records up after that. And I've been to friends' houses where they, you know, have the hallway lined with their bling, and it's cool. I mean, it's an achievement. I get it, but I wasn't that guy.
Does Richard Marx? Does he have them hanging up? Does Marx have them? He does, doesn't he? I know he does.
Richard's a very, 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 very good friend of mine.
But I know he is. That's why I said that. Yeah. To be funny.
But that's cool. I mean, he wrote a lot of hits.
He did.
Other
yeah, it's
too.
Crazy. I know.
He's a friggin' hit machine there. That wasn't me. That just wasn't me.
Well, that's cool. That's an honest answer. I'm glad to hear that.
I put them in a box and, you know, just... I knew they were out there.
I'm sorry that they got ruined, though. That disappoints me.
Yeah, apparently the shed leaked, and I didn't know it. And
Rockstar should have a nicer shed than that, Rick.
I was cleaning the shed out one day, lift up these boxes, and they like all fall apart, and the cardboard's all warped, and it's like fogging on the window and on the glass. So I just threw them out. The couple I saved and gave to... I think, like a fan club to give to people or to sell for
charity,
charity stuff. Yeah.
All right, cool.
But there were, you know, I see in on rock and roll catalogs that stuff sells for a lot of money. So you know, I could have done something good with that instead of letting them.
Maybe
rock
your sons are like, Dad, what the hell?
No, my Get kids aren't into that either. They could care less about that kind of stuff. Honestly.
Nominated for a Grammy, and you win the Grammy. Now, here's what, when I looked up...
It's out in the shed, too. It's rusted.
You're nominated. Here's when you went and... Look, I'm not... When you went to the Grammys that night, you didn't think you were going to win, right?
No, I wasn't even in my head. I was going to play, and I was focusing on playing because it was live.
And the reason I say that
it was
is...
really live.
Yeah.
Not live now. It was really live.
But the reason I say that is, from your perspective, you're sitting there, and your competition is Rick James, Super Freak. Mm-hmm. Right. See, these people are like, how did you win? No. Bruce Springsteen, The River.
Fuck you guys.
Yeah. Rod Stewart for Young Turks, and Gary U.S. Bonds for Dedication. And then this new guy, Rick Springfield, for Jesse's Girl, and you win. Did you have a speech prepared?
I did not. I was shocked as anybody. I thought, did they just say Springsteen or Springfield? so I went up and just...
You winged it.
Yeah, I offered it to my mom. My mom was in the audience, so I said, this is for my mom. And she had it until she passed away. And she had it in a little china cabinet with all her lovely china and shit. It was pretty cool. And it's the only thing I brought home like that from when my mom passed and we cleaned our house out. I brought home the Grammy, and I have a jukebox, one of the old Wurlitzer jukeboxes, you know, from Happy Days. And I stuck it in there inside the jukebox.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Excellent.
We used to make jokes. Doug Davidson, who's my best friend, who's on Young and the Restless and who won an Emmy for his work. We used to make jokes about Grammy and Emmys where people would come to the house and go, where'd you put your Grammy? And say, I don't know, it's around here somewhere. And suddenly these giant doors open, gong, and on a pedestal is a Grammy and spotlights hit it and choir sound. Oh, there it is.
Are you talking about Richard Marx?
You can't. I love Richard. Oh, is that for me? Thank you. I'm a lefty when I drink.
All right, so.
Actually getting warm. Yeah.
Easy, ladies. I still have my shirt on.
That's right, baby.
Oh, thank you so much.
Wow, it's a folder that says, for you.
Here's the deal. I did not print out my notes before I left that Los Angeles the other day. So that's why I've been looking at my phone.
Wow.
Sent a file to my friend Aaron. He printed them out, but then he's been in traffic. And I'm like, I think I can get through a little bit of it, but I'm going to need them.
We were in that traffic, too.
Yeah,
it's
so
insane.
I'm going to need them.
I was thinking of moving here till I got stuck in that traffic.
So,
what?
The Women's March. Right. You marched here.
You marched to San Francisco.
Yes.
From where?
It's from Civic Center.
But you march in San Francisco,
yes.
Which is probably the most woman-friendly place in the universe, right? Huh?
You would think. Uh-oh, she's had some trouble.
Not?
No, it's all good.
Oh, no. Don't brush it under the carpet.
What is your name, ma'am?
I'm Pam.
Pam, do you want to keep talking, or do you want to hear Rick talk? All right. That's what I thought. I'm teasing.
He knows all of
it. I know.
All right.
Okay, Rick, so 1981, all this stuff happens, but then a not good thing happens, too, in 1981, because you lose your father.
Mm-hmm.
And you have, in concert now, you play two songs back-to-back that you wrote for him. I don't...
April 24th, 1981.
And my father's chair. And those are amazing tributes when you play those. It's very emotional all the time. But I want to jump to a song from 1999 from your comeback album, Karma. Mm-hmm. A song called It's Always Something. Because I really love the line in this song about your dad.
Yeah.
So let's hear that, Kyle, then we'll talk.
When I was a kid, the teachers and the priests said, why you let him run around like that? My father said, if the boy wants to play guitar, I said, man.
I just love that line. I think it's fantastic. I really do love that line.
Thank you. So,
that's a great song.
My dad flows in and out of my songs ever since he passed away. Actually, there's a song off Rock of Life where I say I wish I could talk to my father again.
Yeah.
So he does. He comes in and out, you know. And now my mom will. Now my mom's gone. You know, that's important stuff. And my dad was a pretty amazing human being. I mean, both my parents are amazing. I was incredibly lucky to have two parents that loved a dick that I was. I was a dick. I was a dick as a kid, and I was a big dick as a teenager. I was a terrible teenager to my parents. I stayed away from school. I would go out at night with this band that were like 10 years older than me, and they'd rob stores, and I'd be sitting in the car, and, you know, I could have gone such a different route, and they hung in there. And when I was kicked out of 11th grade, when I was 16, and I had to go back and redo the year at a private school, and this guy, very famous Australian guy, came to our house and had seen me play, and like 2 days before I was going to go back to school, he came to my house and talked to my parents and said, we saw your son play, we'd like him to join our band professionally. And I said, Mom and Dad, I don't know what to do, because I felt like I'd really failed, mm-hmm. you know, that I had to succeed at school or my life would be over. And they said, and I said, what should I do? And I knew they'd go, well, son, you got to get an education, otherwise you're screwed, right? They said, you do what you believe, you do what you want to do. And so I said, I want to play guitar. So they said, go ahead.
That's fantastic. So now, is this the way you parent your own sons? Is this how you were as a parent?
No, I give them a credit card and say, it's all on me, kids, go for it. No, I do. I've always, all their lives, I've said, do what you believe in or what you want to do, and don't worry about money, because money will follow. You've got to be passionate mm-hmm. about what you do, because that's what you will stick with when shit gets really difficult. It's because you love it, and you know at some point the sun's going to break through, you know.
Right.
If you're at a job you hate and shit gets difficult, you go, oh, fuck this, I'll go get another one. But if you're passionate about it, you know, and sticking with something is what makes you successful. And it's not talent, it's not anything. You learn stuff along the way, but if you have a passion, it will carry you through the moments when you don't know what the fuck you're doing.
And if you can see it with making a living from your passion, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah,
right?
And I feel that too. I mean, people say, when are you going to retire? And I go, shut up! And I go, if I retired, I'd just look for a band and write, which is what I do, and try and get acting gigs, you know?
If it's in your blood and it's what you do, you just have to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, since...
It doesn't mean it's easier. It just means you have more power to draw from when it gets tough. That's all. Thus endeth the lesson.
So I jumped the whole way to 1999 with the Karma album. We know what happens after Working Class Dog. It's a string of amazing platinum albums, amazing hits, and we're going to get there a little later, but we're going to stick with Karma, and we're going to go on, because I want my listeners, and I want people that might not know about Rick's most recent music, I want to share that with them. I want these people to go to iTunes and buy this music that they've never heard before. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to stick with Karma. Rick, this next song, Beautiful Prize.
Wow.
This is a song that's it's very, very dark lyrically, but it's very catchy musically. And I have to be honest with you.
Even dark stuff's got to have a hook.
I know, but this was just... Now, I've been
you
listening...
You may be talking about killing somebody, but it's got to have a good hook.
I've been listening to this song since this album came out, and it wasn't until last year I'm on the treadmill, and this song comes up, and I'm like, oh my God, this song is, it's about child abuse.
And I insist, yeah.
And I was just shocked that it took me that long for that to click, because I would sing the lyrics too, and I just never, maybe I'm stupid, but.
No, yeah, it takes a while for stories to land. I mean, I've done that. I think that's a great thing about a song that's written not overtly, that you can discover different things in it the more you listen to it.
But now it's actually hard for me to listen to it. I still love it, but it's hard. But Kyle, let's hear a little bit of Beautiful Prize.
Take it away to handle. drinks his beer to the TV chatter. Pitch dark thoughts in his head. But the house he keeps with his hard-won pay is finally asleep after his blue day. He turns his eyes on his beautiful prize. Johanna watches the door open just a crack. And a hand that once held her runs down the length of her.
It makes me, it almost makes me cry every time I hear it. Yeah, it's just really
dark song.
Yeah, it's I'm a mush. I'm like, I have two kids. There's 13 and 17 girls, and it's just everything makes me cry. So but that's a great song, and it's like, it's a song that you need to write, though. You need to, people need to know about these things.
I wrote that actually. I went to it. I'm a big believer in like the Tony Robbins thing, you know, self-empowerment. I've always followed that since I was 17, and it's been my kind of ace in the hole when stuff would get rough. And so one time I was feeling lost, and I love Tony Robbins. I think he's great, and he's a very genius. And so I went to an event in Denver, like a three-day event where you just get so strung out from not sleeping and opening up your heart and crying and cheering. And this girl got up and you tell shit like this.
Yeah.
This girl got up and told this story, you know, about her father abusing her till she was 18. And it was just, you're very open in those kind of events. And I just really took it in. And that's what that song came from.
Well, wow, thank you. That's exactly it. Let's cleanse the palate a little bit. We'll stay with Karma album, but let's listen to Free.
So this is the cage that I built while I built it. I don't know. It's bars made of anger and guilt. No lie, but somehow it just wouldn't let me go.
Another great song.
That's actually Richard Page singing the I'm Free line.
That's Richard Page?
Richard Page
from
singing
Mr.
the I'm Free is Richard, yeah. Because I
still,
wrote
can
that
still get
I
up there.
Richard's got to sing this line. It'd be freaking perfect. But that's about a little kid, actually, who lived above us. And he was, his dad was a school teacher at Malibu High. And he had two sons. One was five, and the other one was like two or three. This little kid used to stand on top of the hill, and we'd be out playing basketball. And my sons, he'd yell out, can I come down and play? And it was just cute little blonde-headed kid. And they went on vacation up in Tahoe, and he fell in the lake. And by the time the elder brother had got his parents back to the spot, he'd gone. And so yeah. It's about... it's weird. I haven't heard that song in a long time.
Look what I brought.
All right, tissues. You knew you were going to get here, right?
Well, no, because for me, because I...
Yeah,
I'm going to get there in a minute.
And he's a beautiful little kid. And it's basically about, you know, being healed.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful song. And I don't know, what else do you say? The song says it all. Do you need a tissue? Let's move on to the next album.
Sorry, my songs on Karma are so sad, but I was really going through a tough time.
The next album is Shock, Denial, Anger, and Acceptance. It's got 17 tracks. These are, I just reread your book, Late at Night, and I think that book describes why you had to write that album. You had to purge yourself of demons, or how do you explain the songs on these albums?
I got myself into a dark place, and I just wrote about it, and I guess I had a lot to say.
Yes, you did. And how do you write a book? Because I always, when I read any autobiography, How do you write a book like that and be so honest and so raw and just let everything out there, knowing that your wife and your sons and your everyone you know is going to read that? How do you how are you able to do that? Because I think that would be very difficult to put that out into the world like
I
that.
Wrote it. They hooked me up with a ghostwriter first, and I told her, you know, one story, and she wrote a chapter, and I kind of read it and went, well, this could be anybody, any musician starting out, right? So I'd already written 30,000 words. So I sent it to my publisher, and she goes, she said her eyes rolled back in her head, and she said, oh, okay, I'm going to read this shit and then tell him we'll do the heavy lifting. But she read it all on a BlackBerry in one night and called me up saying, my God, this is great. You're a writer. I want you to write the whole thing. So I did. And it was the joy of writing and reliving all these moments. Yeah. And I realized, I said, how am I going to remember all this stuff? But think about a period in my life, and I go to sleep, and I wake up, and it would all be there, because you never lose the memory. They just file further and further back. And I enjoyed writing it. But once I'd finished it, I sent it to her. And then about 3 weeks later, a couple of weeks before it was to be released, I got cold feet. And I called up and said, look, I don't want this book released. I didn't realize people are actually going to read it. Which you don't. I mean, you really don't. I wasn't writing it going, yeah, people are going to think this is really funny or really cool. I just wrote it for the joy of writing it and discovering it. And then when I realized that, you know, it was going to reflect on my relationship with my wife. And she, I sent it to her, a couple of her best friends. And I said, read this, and what do you think? How am I representing my wife in this? Does she look like, you know, some hapless fucking victim? Because she wasn't, and she is not. She's got balls for days.
Right.
And she said, I don't need to read the book. I lived through it, right? And they read the book, and they said, and both of them said, it sounds like a love letter to her.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
Because it's, I'm, you know, I'm owning up to my shit, and she knows all of it.
Right.
And I'm not, you know, I haven't been perfect, and went through a lot of shit, and she suffered through it with me, and suffered because of me, and so I wanted their take before I released it. So they gave it the thumbs up.
And if you haven't read it, it's and this will sound weird coming off what you just said, it's a fun read, though. You don't, you're funny in
it.
I
do open up trying to kill myself at 16,
other than that fun chapter, you're a really good writer. It's funny at times, and then I'll read, I was reading things, and I'm like, wow, man, this guy is really telling the truth. Because I've read ones where I'm like, eh, this guy, I don't know what this guy,
I didn't realize you weren't supposed to necessarily tell the truth.
right.
I thought, autobiography, well, obviously everyone's written about themselves, but no, some, you know, there's been a lot of image polishing in autobiographies, and I didn't want to do that because it wouldn't have been truthful, and I couldn't have spoken from, you know, the part of me that writes. I would have been bullshit.
So the album, Shock, Denial, Anger, and Acceptance, it's a nice, do they call it a compendium to the book? Is that what they,
it's a compendium to part of the book, yeah, for sure.
But there's some great songs on here. I just looked at the time and I saw that we only have about a half hour, and I want to get to other stuff. But so my apologies to the song Perfect, the song Will I, and there's I feel like if I play this one, we might cry again. But let's hear a little bit
it's
of...
another sad Ricky song.
Let's hear a little bit of... no, we're not going to do it.
We're not?
No, because the next thing I'm going to ask you is going to be... my apologies to Angels of the Disappeared. It's a fantastic song. It's about missing children or
Angels of the Disappeared.
Yes.
Yeah, it's about you know, kids that go missing and what happens to them? You know, what happens to their soul? What happens to the person that never knows what happened to them? Which I think is the most friggin', I can't imagine anything worse.
No, it would be the most terrible thing. I promise we're going to get back to fun. I promise. We will. But we are. But this next thing is, I'm going to jump to 2008. It's Venus in Overdrive. Mm. Fantastic album. Opens with What's Victoria's Secret. Let's hear a little bit of What's Victoria's Secret. This was the single from the album.
Tell me her thing, cause I need an exit strategy. Oh, what a tragedy. But I know she's not what's best for me. And I know she calls me hard. And I know she'd rather fly away to someone else's arms. Oh, it's true, the world wants a mystery, but I need to know one thing. Tell me the clothes she wears will expose all of my weakness.
I want to play a little bit of Who Killed Rock and Roll. Mm-hmm. I think that might have been a bonus track on some versions
track,
of this.
Yeah.
But and I think, am I wrong? Is there a Cheap Trick sample in this song? I think there might be a
I might have copped a riff. So I wanted to write a song where every riff was different.
Okay.
And I copped a bit of, nodded to AC/DC, I nodded to The Who, a bunch of different kind of, they're not, it's not the riff, but it's like, you go, okay, I know where
you're
going.
Okay, I'll point at the speaker when what I think sounds like Cheap Trick. Right. Let's hear a little bit of Who Killed Rock and Roll.
And left her for dead. Roses bloom from where she bled. Come on, is there anybody out there? Crops is closing the body on the floor.
Sounded a little Dream Police-ish
that's
to me.
Nod.
That's your who nod. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
That's, what is it, you know? Out here in this fields. You know,
oh, Bob
Teenage
O'Reilly.
Wasteland.
Yeah,
what's
Bob,
it called?
So what did you say,
O'Reilly.
Kyle?
Bob O'Reilly.
Bob O'Reilly.
O'Reilly.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. That's the most obvious one.
That is
the
most obvious
because I'm a giant Who fan, and it's not quite the riff, but it's close. Close enough to be sued. So, Pete, don't sue me. That's why it was a bonus track.
Okay, now we're going to get to the song that closes out this album. Hold on a second, because I'm getting on deck with a little bit of a tissue action.
I better get some, too. No, I don't only write sad songs.
I know you don't. We're going to play songs for the end of the world, and those songs kick ass. So, but we are going to play this song called Saint Sahara, and I would like you to tell the story of what this song and who the song's about.
Sahara was a... I met her when she was 5 years old. Her mom had started coming to my concerts when she was like 12 or 13. And when I started playing again, she had a daughter by that time named Sahara. And she said, I'm going to bring my daughter. We'll have a mother-daughter thing. And she was one of those kids that you just couldn't ignore. And she was just such an incredible human being. And I remember the first time I saw her, she was like, it was a meet and greet line. And she was like, kept jumping back and forward out of the meet and greet line looking at me, right? And I said, who is this kid? And she got up and she said, and you know, we took a photo. And she said, so where are we going to go for dinner? And from then on, I started to hang with her and her mom. And she was just incredible. I just absolutely fell in love with her. And she was so, such an amazing, amazing kid. And I actually had an assistant while I was doing effects up in Vegas who had a terrible experience as a kid with her parents, right? And she said, I'm never going to, you know, because I had a couple of kids. She said, I'll never have kids. I couldn't stand it. And she met Sahara, and she said, if I could be guaranteed a kid like that, I would have one in a fucking heartbeat. But she was just one of the kids. And then 11 years old, her mom called me up devastated. They found four-stage glioblastoma cancer in a brainstem. And she died at 13 after just rigorous friggin' chemotherapy. And I didn't want to write a maudlin song. She said, if you write about it, please don't write, you know, poor Sahara, this kind of shit, right? Because she was, I know it's not poor Sahara, so I wrote this song about it.
All right, well, I'm already crying from the story, so let's hear Saint Sahara.
Come on, close the book, turn out the light, put your plans aside tonight. Yeah, I know it's not wrong, but it sure isn't right. Angel bids a last good night to us. Come on, Sahara, give us a smile. You walk this far with us, let's walk one more mile. Hey, Saint Sahara, beautiful child, you left us all wanting, you left us beguiled. Mama, my, mama, my, mama, my.
I didn't realize that played so much slide guitar and all this old stuff. I thought the slide was a new thing, but
The song ends with a children's choir and lyrics like, come on, Sahara, you fought the good fight. I can't even read it. But how do you sit down and write a song like this without just crying over the guitar the whole time you're writing this
thing? Well, you do. I mean, you know, you get teared up. But I'd actually, this is an amazing story for this song, because I'd written just like an 8-line prose, completely separate from anything, that I just wrote about her after she died. And I just, you know, I just stuck it in my computer and just knew it was there. It's just a poem about her.
Yeah.
And I wrote, musically, I wrote the first verse to this song, the verse of this song, and I said, wow, I wonder if that would, and I had the idea of a song called Saint Sahara for her. I said, I wonder if this would work. So I went on, got my computer, opened it up, and the words fit absolutely perfectly to the music that I'd already written.
And did you let her mom hear this before gave it to the world?
I sent it to her first and said, am I okay with this? You know, and she said, she, her and her husband played it, and she said, her husband played it every morning.
Wow. There we go.
Fuck, Pat, seriously? Yeah, I listen to this Rick Springfield podcast. What a fucking weenie. He's crying all the time. What a wuss.
Well, look. Take comfort in knowing that I'm not... that we're not going to play Pretty Little Mess. So, Kyle, play, let's go to 2012 Songs for the End of the World. Let's hear Our Ship Sinking. That's a great treadmill song. That one I run right through the wall when it's on. This album came out in 2012. You sneaky bastard. You had 4 different album covers.
Mm-hmm.
You had bonus tracks across. What? So you had to buy them all to get all the songs.
I know.
There's even an acoustic version on Amazon you can download. You had a Rick Springfield app.
That was cool.
You would engage the app, and you would hold the camera at the album cover, and Rick would move
it
on
would
the
come
album.
To life. Yeah,
come
I
to
forgot
life.
About that. That was a great technology some guys had just come up with, and you download the app, and you could point it at like 5 or 6 photographs in the booklet, and it would come to life, and I'd talk to you. It was pretty wild.
And then when I updated my phone, that app disappeared. God damn it!
I know. The app was only good for a little while. But... yeah, that we still do that song live because it really kicks ass live. And
I'm gonna play another song from the album that kicks ass. Let's hear "I Hate Myself." That's your favorite? Sing along.
Everybody thinks I'm a creep, but so do I. Because I hate myself, 'cause I want you.
I love that I'm a one-man wrecking crew. So good. So good. This album, this is a great rock record. The mid-tempo songs are great. Every song on this album is really great. This is a,
yeah,
this is a really, not that I like all the albums, but when this one came out, I was like, wow, look at that. This guy has still got the juice. So thank you so much for that. Also, I want to mention you have you wrote a Lullabies album, you got a Christmas album, mm-hmm. You had a whole bunch of stuff going.
Yeah.
And in May 9th, 2014, you get your star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. That's pretty great. Who did the dedication for that? Usually they have someone that presents it to you. Do you remember who did it?
Doug Davidson, my best friend, was there. Jason Thompson, who played my son on General Hospital.
Okay.
And Richard Marx.
Oh, fantastic.
My buddy Richard.
Does Richard Marx have a star on the Walk of Fame?
I don't know. Actually, I don't know.
He's
hung up in his house. It's a comedy podcast. We love Richard Marx. I love Richard Marx. Where is your star located? Like if the ladies wanted to go and lie down next to it and get their picture taken. And when I say ladies, I mean me.
I've seen photos of them laying down.
Where's it located?
I think it's outside the Clear Channel building.
Live Nation.
Excuse me.
Oh,
sorry.
My goodness.
Whoa. Okay, that was a big faux pas.
You've seen it, haven't you?
Outside the Live Nation building is a big concert place. I was hoping it'd be outside a porn shop. I thought it'd be kind of appropriate. I'd look up ladies' dresses. Hey, that's a song called Celluloid Heroes. I don't know, by Dave.
Yeah, that's a
by
King
the Kinks.
Song. Yeah, it's an amazing song.
So Rudolph Valentino's, he talks about the stars in Hollywood Boulevard. It says Rudolph Valentino is very much alive as he looks up ladies' dresses as they sadly pass him by.
All right, 2016. We're at 2016 already because we're running out of time very quickly. But you released Rocket Science, which when I read about it, it said this was a country album.
Yeah, not so much.
No. Just because it has fiddle on the song doesn't make it a country album.
No, I was sucking up to Nashville, let's be honest. I've been listening to a lot of country, and I loved the whole rock thing they were bringing in. And I've always, I had banjo on my very first hit, Speak to the Sky. So I come by banjo honestly.
The first song I want to play was a bonus track on the Best Buy Only edition of this album. Please don't read my notes. Then you won't be surprised. but I don't understand why this song wasn't on the regular edition of...
Oh, I don't know. We get tunnel vision when we record. I mean, and sometimes, as a couple of people said, I think some of your best songs are the
bonus tracks.
Yeah, on the album.
And I got to be... No offense to you, but if you gave this song... It's called Walking In. If you gave this song... If Carrie Underwood recorded this song, this would be a number one song.
No, it's a good song. I agree.
No, it's not a good song, Rick. It's a great song. Let's hear Walking In.
A couple of fans... Absolute favorite song.
It's my favorite song off this album. Let's hear Walking In. Everyone's had a breakup, so I love the song. I miss that we were once forever. I miss you waking up in my sweater. I hope you find somebody better. I guess I'm not the one. Just fantastic.
Oh,
fantastic.
I wrote that actually in the back of the Wild Horse Saloon in Nashville, actually, where we used to play we played like five Valentine's Days in a row at this Wild Horse Saloon. We played a couple of nights there. And I wrote that the guy J.D. Harding backstage, a country writer.
Let's hear, I think this was the first single that was released from the album, I think, Down. Let's hear Down.
Down, even down to the river and back. Feeling like you're drowning again. It's unreal.
Okay, we're close on time. I'm gonna go back but I can't end this without, we're gonna talk about the Snake King one more time, but I can't end this without talking about my number one favorite Rick Springfield album, which is Success Hasn't Spoiled Me Yet. Every single song is a winner on this album. I love it. This album makes me feel so good. It's the album, it's my Rick Springfield go-to album, is Success Hasn't Spoiled Me Yet. And since we were talking about it a little bit earlier, please, Kyle, play How Do You Talk to Girls. I play this album so much in the car that my 13-year-old daughter says, can we listen to something else?
Damn it.
And I say, you don't like it? She goes, I like it, but Dad, please. Let's jump into I Get Excited. Yeah.
You're not gonna play. You'll just ignore what your body is trying to say. I got the feeling that you're playing and we're both gonna win. And I think this angel's about to sing. I get excited just thinking what you might be like. I get excited. There's heaven in your eyes tonight.
And then, Kyle, right into Just One Kiss. Let's keep it going.
Oh, no!
All right, I'm gonna do apologies to songs that we're not gonna get to. I'm gonna end the show with a gigantic hit. It's one of the best ones. It's so good. I wish I didn't have to end the show. I could do this for another 90 minutes, and I could get to everything. Apologies to Walk Like a Man, State of the Heart, Written in Rock, Tear It All Down, Honeymoon in Beirut. I mean, fantastic song. Thank you. You mean like I'm a lady? I'll march with you. I definitely have to ask you, you played Live Aid. That's crazy. Do you remember who brought you out?
No, I don't, actually. I remember
I can
being
tell you.
On the side of the stage looking at it going, holy shit.
I can tell you who introduced you. And again, this is for humor, so feel free to laugh. I believe you drew the short straw that day. Joe Piscopo introduced you. So.
That's funny.
You were the eighth act to go up on the U.S. lineup. You played from 10:27 a.m. to 10:47 a.m., 20 minutes. You did Love Somebody, State of the Heart, and Human Touch. And I just want to add this. Black Sabbath went on at 9:55 a.m.
Whoa.
Now, is that because they didn't think Ozzy could make it till the evening without being hammered? Probably.
Yeah. That's okay. Way too early for a musician.
So what was it like to, did you realize what a big thing it was at the time?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I knew it was, you know, a big extravaganza for sure.
That had to be the biggest audience you were ever in front of at that point.
Yeah, and televised, and it was pretty huge. It was I knew it wasn't kind of the, even then I knew it wasn't the kind of, I know everyone has a great memory of it and it was all like rock and roll making a difference, but I felt like, you know, it was not necessarily going to help too much, you know, because it was, you can't just throw money at people. I mean, you got to, like the whole thing, you got to, don't give them a fish, teach them how to fish. And I just hoped that, you know, that it helped.
Bring people. Awareness.
Yeah.
Bring awareness.
Yeah, it brought awareness, but honestly, you know, everyone's so busy with their life. It's like, okay, but I got to get up tomorrow and, you know, and it's, I think it's more the memory of the great event rather than kind of who it served is what exists still, you know.
Did you hang out for a while after your set?
I was in the middle of a tour, as most people were, and
so you couldn't meet like some of your heroes.
Eric Clapton did want to meet me, and I blew him off.
Is that true?
I know. Isn't that stupid? Also blew off Prince. I blew off a lot of people. I know. No, I was incredibly insecure at that point. And Eric and I had the same agent, Bobby Brooks, a beautiful guy who actually died in the helicopter crash that took Stevie Ray Vaughan. But he was an amazing guy. And he said, came to me, Eric wants to meet you. I said, not now, dude. I'm about to go on. I think, heck, I go, what the fuck was I thinking? And Prince was awesome. He liked actually Rock of Life. He liked he actually hired the engineer of Rock of Life because he liked the sound of the album, and he invited me out to one of his like 3 a.m. gigs at his place at Paisley Park, and I had to get up at like 3 the next morning. I said, sorry, I can't. I got to catch a flight.
I thought the story was going to end with you went. No, you didn't go.
No, I blew it off just because I had to, because I had no, you know, we were in the middle of a tour again. It's like, honestly, people say, oh, you're going to be in Jersey. You go, come on out and we'll go fishing and have a barbecue and meet the kids. And like, you don't have time for that. You fly in. You fly in already sleep deprived. If you have spare time, you go to sleep. Or if you don't, you go to sound check. Then you have dinner. Then you play the show. Then you have a drink afterward. Then you go to sleep and get up sleep deprived the next morning and fly to the next gig. That's just, you know, there is no time on the road.
Well, if you haven't seen Rick on Live Aid, you can see it on YouTube. The hair is gorgeous. It really is. And I believe, again, I believe Joe Piscopo was there because I think he thought he was introducing Bruce Springsteen. They're
you
from
liked
Jersey.
It for the river.
They're from Jersey. Yes, exactly. All right, the new album comes out this coming Friday. It's called The Snake King. You go to Best Buy, you can get it for $7.99. Just saying, it's a promotional thing. Thank you so much for being here, Rick.
I'm very happy to be here.
Really,
a lot of fun.
Really enjoyed that you were here. I want to thank Kyle. Thank you, Kyle. I want to thank your people, Wayne Sharp and Kim Jackworth, for making this happen. And I want to help thank the festival people, Janet Varney and David Owen and Cole Stratton, for helping plan all this. Thank you, people, for coming
thank
out.
Thank you, San Francisco. I love it.
And let's play out with a song from Hard to Hold. And is it you that makes the joke? What do you call that movie?
Hard to Watch.
Right.
Hard to Swallow.
Big round of applause for Mr. Rick Springfield. Let's crank up Love Somebody.